Well, that Herman might be an okay radio host, but he doesn't know anything about baseball. A single to midfield? What is this? A bunch of Seattle spirit?
I don't have the answers. We're actually making this up as we go
along.
That's
what I was doing. I don't know baseball.
If there were easy solutions, Seattle probably would not have elected a woman mayor.
It is an act of war to invest in white supremacy and terrorism with this bunker.
That is a brain-dead policy.
That little new Jay Inslee for you. Michael?
I wish I could hear it, but...
Well, it's got to be your volume knob. Sorry about that. Michael Medved's in the studio with us with headphones that don't work.
Yeah,
that's okay.
That's all right. I can hear
I'll take mine off.
Yeah.
We'll play fair.
That's right. No tariffs on my side, no tariffs on your side.
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah, that's right. Zero tariff policy. Let's have it. No, it's and by the way, it's okay. I mean, it makes sense. I don't know why midfield isn't a baseball term, but it's not. It's a soccer term.
Well,
I think.
I've made it one. Now I've made it one.
Or sometimes in football too, you can have a play that makes it to midfield. Right,
right, exactly. And I come from a football background,
there
so it's
go.
Defensible. So let me pick your brain on this, and then I want to have a legitimate philosophical discussion with you. Legitimate, edgy, but legitimate. Okay. So you love baseball because I can't peel your eyes away from the screen right now. There's a little baseball going on.
No, I know.
Okay.
Even though the score is not pretty.
As you cover your eyes. So I don't like, and I don't know how you feel about any taxpayer money going to professional sports. I don't want it ever to happen because they don't need it. And it's not usually a good deal for the taxpayer. Now in Seattle, the Safeco Field, that doesn't belong to the Mariners. They lease it. And now the King County Council looks like, Michael, they're going to take back $180 million. They had promised the Seattle Mariners in upkeep. You are someone who has rented commercial space. I've rented commercial space. It's very common that you work into your lease. Like in this fine building, our great owners have worked in some upgrades, and our building's being upgraded. It's part of your lease. Now the King County Council wants to claw back that money. They want to do away with that agreement, and they want to say, we may give you $25 million, but not $180 million. And they want to put this money supposedly into affordable housing. We know that's going to be a scam. So my question for you is, would you be as entertained as I was if the Mariners said, okay, good, we're leaving?
No.
I would love it.
No,
I would celebrate. I love the club. I've gotten to know the people there.
They're great people. And it's really, despite some of the recent charges, it's a great company. And they do a terrific job. And generally, when you go to Safeco Field, and I do enjoy going there, it's arguably the best place in the country to watch baseball.
Yeah.
And especially when they have a winning team, as well, not so much today, as they have most of the time. It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
And it's one of those very few things that really brings this city together, where you can forget about the fact that everybody is so far to the left and people are here and people are there and they're wrong and homeless and there's this and there's that. And the idea that basically you want to take away from maintaining Safeco Field, which is used by, well, they've been averaging pretty good attendance this year.
Yeah, so. Tom Petty had one of his last concerts there. It's used for some premier shows now, and actually bands really like it. Pearl Jam is doing some stuff there. There's been some the Eagles played there. So it's become sort of an outdoor arena in that way. So it's not just the Mariners. But here's where I come down on. If Seattle reneges on this deal, I want the Mariners to leave. I'd like them to go to Bellevue.
Uh-huh.
I would like them to think of this.
Too expensive for Bellevue to build a stadium. Where would they put it?
No, they could put that. They could find a place to put that. We'll find a place. Put it on the east side. Put it somewhere that actually wants reasonableness. Because did you see Bellevue? They launched bike lanes over there. Did you hear how they've done this?
No.
So unlike Seattle, they did the exact opposite. They took a tiny little section of downtown. They're testing bike lanes. Here's their measure. Does it interrupt car travel? Does it interrupt bus travel? Does it make it hard for the bike riders? Is it safe for them? Does it cut down on congestion? Is it reasonable for the city? They're not going to move forward on an expansion on this until they have the data.
Yeah,
and,
good.
And so I want the Mariners to say to Seattle, okay, we're done. They would find the place in Woodinville. They'd find the place somewhere on the east side to put that club in there, and you watch, they would thrive. I would love this.
You know, again, and then what happens to the facility?
That's what I want to watch.
It could be the world's biggest homeless camp.
That's what I, and so here's my other point. Who do you think houses is helpful in housing more people? The Seattle City Council or the King County Council? Let's say the King County Council, they're making this decision. Or the Seattle Mariners. Think about that organization. Forget just the baseball players and the millionaires. Michael, the people selling concessions, the people who sell T-shirts and make T-shirts, and the people who keep the facility up and work there keeping it up.
And basically all the people right around in Pioneer Square and down in SoDo who have businesses that are totally dependent upon the crowds here in at Safeco.
Right, exactly. So I want to see the Mariners hold to this and say, look, there are other places in this area that'll have a stadium up in 2 years. We'll pay for a 2 years extension, and then we're going to go be and call it the Bellevue Mariners. It would just no. I would enjoy this. Let me open a philosophical discussion with you. There, you know about the have you read about this officer, Diego Moreno?
I have. What a great guy he sounds like.
What a story, too.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's an unbelievable story. But there's so many of those locally right now. Go ahead.
Right. So he was a legal immigrant from Venezuela, and he shared how amazed he was that was a police officer in the United States before his life was taken. The young man who is being charged with his death. We are trying to figure out his immigration status. Now, here's why this matters, is because of the sanctuary city, sanctuary state policy. And the rumor is that his family's here illegally. The government is hiding that information from us. They will not tell us. They do everything they can to not report on it. It's pertinent to the story, like the case on the east side where that elderly couple took in that older woman she's not older. She's 40, but she turned out to be a street person who has, grievously injured them. That detail mattered. The media didn't want to share that with us. When government refuses to give us our information, here's the philosophical question. At what point does it become the moral choice for a patriotic hacker to get that information for us?
Oh, I don't ever want to encourage hacking.
I'm not saying that you do. I'm having a philosophical discussion.
I don't think it's ever moral to do illegal hacking. I don't think it's ever moral. And you can't say there's a higher good, because then you can say, oh, well, this despicable political organization that I disagree with deserves to be hacked. And no, that doesn't work.
Okay. When you have Sound Transit that masks their books, won't get into the details, you have to do public document request after document request.
Then you go after it using legal means. In other words, you don't expose illegality.
Illegality. Can you understand why I find this to be a philosophical question?
Yes, but it's very seductive. I mean, it's in other words, that whole thing, Crime and Punishment, one of the great novels ever written.
Yeah.
Raskolnikov is this brilliant intellectual who has convinced himself that the moral thing for him to do is to murder that old lady who's his miserable landlord and to take her money,
sure,
because that will allow him to fulfill his destiny and his great art and things like that. And he's a Nietzschean, but you can't play that way. I mean, we're talking about this today on my show a little bit, is that not every law is necessarily based on morality. But if a law isn't immoral, if it's just there for the purpose of helping people live together in society, you still have to follow it. And that I know is Christian doctrine. It's classic Christian doctrine. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's.
Now, are you trying to tell me that I need to start paying the Sound Transit tab fees? Because I'm not gonna. It's an illegal tax. And so I register my car outside the Sound Transit taxing district. And so do 500 of my, 500 or so of my, my listeners.
So how do you do that?
I use an address that I have in Eastern Washington.
I see. So, but is it an address you legitimately have?
I do legitimately have the address.
Okay, so,
but I don't legitimately live there. It's
so
illegal.
Why is it illegal?
Because the law says that I'm supposed to have my car registered at my primary residence. That address is not my primary residence.
I see.
But here's the reason I find this philosophical rather than seductive, Michael, is because we have laws like the 405 tolls. Those are expressly illegal. The Sound Transit tab fees are expressly illegal. The government hiding information from us isn't expressly illegal, but it should be illegal.
Yeah,
and it is our information.
How hard can it be to push to find out the immigration status of this family?
Well, so far it's 2 weeks of work and no one will crack. No one will come forward, which leads me to believe they're probably here illegally, or they were.
Okay, when did they come to the United States? Do we know that?
Nope. Nope. We're operating on a rumor.
Do we know where they came to the United States from?
No, we think it's Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Right. But look,
here's... But when you say you think it's Mexico, is that just instinct or...
No, it's the rumor. And it's the rumor through a lot of sources saying this is what we understand to be the case.
Right.
The government owes us this information, and it's just further to me sign that we're entering into this low-trust society. By the way, I don't want to encourage hacking either, so you know.
Right.
That's not where I'm at. But I invite the conversation... Because I think that the government's inviting it. From the text line, 800-465-8770, move the Mariners. I'd be more than willing to see games since I'd avoid the Seattle traffic and street people nightmares. Let's move it. You know what, Michael? I got an idea. Mercer Island.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah, a lot of room there. Okay, we'll come back into the live world of breaking news. Believe it or not, there is really some really fantastic and legitimately uncovered economic news. It has to do with your wages. And it plays straight into a piece that Michael brought my attention to, written by Brett Stevens, who I think used to identify as a conservative. Now, I think he's at the New York Times. He says he's there to be never Trump. He has written a piece on how Donald Trump won the 2020 election. At Michael's recommendation, I read it. It actually is a great piece to discuss. To the Todd Emmer Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM in the studio with me, the great Michael Medved, heard here and on over, is it now, 300 radio stations?
It is indeed.
Yeah, it's a great big show. You have the podcast, you got it that, and Michael Medved Unplugged, right, on michaelmedved.com. Great economic news. The employment cost index, meaning your labor is costing more, has risen in its fastest clip in about 20 years. This is great news because what this means is not just is unemployment low, but that that low unemployment now means that employers, in order to get good people, are having to raise the rates that they're willing to pay to have great people.
Yeah, and it works a lot better than a minimum wage.
Yeah, it does. Minimum wage is counterproductive to that, right?
No doubt.
So here's what we're seeing in the country, and there's a piece that Michael pointed me to, and I know you've talked about this at length in the national show. Brett Stevens with the thought experiment on how President Trump, in his experiment, Trump won a sweeping victory. In fact, won the Electoral College, added Nevada to the states that he won, beat Elizabeth Warren and Sherrod Brown, certainly a powerhouse team if there ever was one.
You bet.
And did it based upon a strong economy, but did it also based upon Russia fatigue and on morality fatigue and the attacks that the left continued to make against the president on a personal basis than on this collusionary basis. How likely do you find that scenario, that that's what carries the president to victory in 2020 is a booming economy? And, Michael, it is booming.
Yeah, it is, and I hope it continues to
Me
boom.
Too.
But, look, it's. I think, frankly, even if the economy slows, what will make Trump a likely winner is the likelihood of a significant third-party candidate. In other words, if someone like, I don't know, Jeff Flake makes the terrible mistake of running for president as some kind of independent and gets 3 or 4%, in our elections, that makes a difference. And every one of those votes will be a vote away from Democrats. It will not be a vote away from Trump. And Trump, I am very sure, because he has at least some smart political operators around him, at least I hope he does. I am sure he understands that the more third and fourth party votes that are awarded there, the more likely he is to win re-election. Here's something. I was looking up the numbers again. He won election the last time really, really, really because of Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, because this ended up being basically he so dominated everyone's consciousness. It ended up being a vote yes or no on Donald Trump, just as it's going to be next time.
Right. But now he has behind him, for people like you and I who were challenged by the president personally, now you and I have seen the fruits of the labor. We've seen the policies. None of my fears have come true. Right. And I see the policies. I've said on the show that I'm never going to mesh with the president's personality. It's just not who I am, but that's immaterial to me.
Right.
We've hired a man to do work, and the tax cuts have worked. The regulatory reform has worked. The judiciary, we don't even need to talk about. It is stellar. It is absolutely stellar. And if Kavanaugh joins, it's even more stellar. And Michael, it's in fact, I don't think it's overstating it to say it is republic. It is a sustenance for the republic that we get these two justices versus who Hillary Clinton would have put on that court.
Yeah, and by the way, and there is every good chance. I know that Ruth Bader Ginsburg says she's going to continue for another 5 years, but there's a very good chance that these are not the last Supreme Court appointments. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh that Trump is going to make. Look, it's one of those things where. I think it's tough to predict what's going to happen in the election this November. I think what is possible to predict this November is that Republicans will succeed in holding the Senate. And my guess would be that we gain a net gain of 2 Senate seats.
And in contravention to that, or not contravention to that, but in addition to that, I just wanted to add in that Stevens piece, he imagined that, again, he's thinking in the future, 2020, Trump is the electoral, not just electoral college, but popular vote winner of the presidency. He had imagined a House of Representatives that went to the Democrats.
Which is most likely.
Okay, and to the advantage of Donald Trump.
Correct.
Because then he gets to point to Nancy Pelosi every single day. And the American people have to watch that woman represent half the country. An abomination.
Yeah.
Right?
And that they will immediately concentrate a lot of their energy on a drive for impeachment, which will be very unpopular with anyone who isn't already a fire-breathing, full-out Democrat. Impeachment is a ridiculous idea. He will never be removed from office that way. And I think, in a sense, he's almost trolling them to do that. And do I think that there are people around Trump who think, you know what, you should concentrate on the Senate, pick up a few seats there because that'll confirm your judges, and meanwhile, let him have the House? I think there are probably people who are telling him that.
Oh,
however,
there's no doubt.
It's a disaster for the country, because what it means is that we would have stupid and pointless government shutdowns, and we would have absolutely no progress on anything except the one thing that Trump and the Democrats both want, which is a great big infrastructure bill, which puts us even further and further into debt. And for people, and I know tons, one of the reasons I respect you so much is that you're serious about the national deficit national debt.
I, in fact, I'm doing a massive bit of research into this because I'm looking at the $32 trillion for the so-called Medicaid for all, Medicare for all. And yes, you bet I'm serious about it because I don't think people truly have a respect for what these numbers mean, that it's a $220 trillion in unfunded liabilities, promises we've made, money we've decided to spend. I don't think people truly understand their share of the debt. And yes, it's ruinous. That's why I look at the legs, a three-legged table, Michael, management, you know, business management, people, process, perception. You know, you knock down one of those legs, your management table falls over. In the case of the president, you look at hands-on management. You look at money in, you look at money out, and then you look at regulation. Regulation's been a home run for the president. He's done it smart. He's done it legally. He's done it within constitutional bounds. The tax cuts are, of course, striking up the economy. We've got a massive investment in this country. Fell down on the spending. But you're exactly right. If we get the Democrats in control of the House, then we get seduced in, speaking of political seduction, into some kind of infrastructure spend that deepens that debt.
And also the chance of right now, the one of my problems with the Trump administration is I don't think they're serious about the budget.
It's a Bannon holdover. Bannon had said we can run the debt forever as long as we're winning the middle of the country. I pray that the president would give some thought to, you know, when I really admire him and when he does great things is when I hear from CFO Trump. When I hear him speak of the insanity of levers and layers and layers of bureaucracy, or what's done to business people, when I hear that, President, I get a Chris Matthews thrill. So I wish you would think that way. I appreciate you joining us. MichaelMedved.com.
Hey, what a pleasure.
Thank you very much. Todd Emmert Show will continue, speaking of all those debt numbers. Yeah, I am going to get a huge segment on that tomorrow. It's about how to argue with socialists and how to win. We'll come back on the Todd Emmert Show. 3 police shootings. One of them is hugely controversial. One you have never, ever heard of. And another, well, it's so hidden that people really aren't talking about it at all. And they should be. Has to do with a Vietnam veteran protecting his family. to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. There was, of course, all police shootings now, whether they're justified or not, whether they're demonstrably justified or not. All of them now are controversial if they involve an African-American, if they involve, well, or that matter, a Hispanic person to some degree. But if they involve an African-American, they are all suspect, which is absolutely on purpose. It's the design of Black Lives Matter. There's three cases I wanted to discuss with you. One of them that's just gotten no media coverage, and it is utterly bizarre. Two of them come out of Minnesota, which is key because it's the same locale. So it should have sort of the same effect on society. You may have heard of the case of this guy was running from the cops. They came upon him, and he was holding a gun. His name was Thurman Blevins. So what happened is the police got a report that there was a guy around shooting guns where he shouldn't have been. And so they went out to investigate, and they came upon this guy in North Minneapolis and is 31 years old. He's standing there talking to a woman who has a baby in the stroller. And he matches the description of the guy who was shooting the gun, right, around this neighborhood. So the police stop, and one of the cops, eagle-eyed, says, gun, gun, the guy had a gun. And it was in his, he was wearing shorts, and it was in one of his pockets, a handgun. And the police told him, of course, to put the gun down. Of course, he refused, and he ran. So he goes taking off. And the video is rather a clear video, and it's lengthy. And the officer, I counted 15 times the officer said to drop the weapon. Four times he said, sir, it's okay, just drop the weapon, just stop, right? Just stop, it's okay, just stop. And clearly the man was terrified. And he was terrified for what did happen. Is eventually he turned, and it looked to me, and it looks like in the video, and it's actually relatively clear that his hand went to the weapon. Now, I'm thinking he may well have said, I got to get rid of this gun. I got to throw this. And I'm trying to put myself in his head. I've been told, you know, if you're a young African-American man, you've been taught cops can't wait to kill you. They want to kill you. Rogue white cops everywhere killing young black men. That's exactly what Black Lives Matter wanted everybody to think. Nonetheless, his hand went to the weapon. The officer did what the officer had to do at that point, is he took this man's life. Now, of course, immediately we are told that it was not a gun. It was. We've seen cases where people held cell phones. Really tragic. Really tragic. And for the officers as well. This was not the case. He had a gun. They found the shell casing by it. Now, in the video, I couldn't see where Blevins shot the gun, but apparently it went off. And I could see it going off when he was dying. Because he was hit, I think, a number of times. The authorities there, their county attorney, Mike Freeman, released the body cam footage almost immediately and then went through it and said he's not going to be charged. So now, very predictably, everybody's upset on the side of this guy was shot. It's murder. It's what we expected. And they're saying we're not angry. We're disgusted. But the video evidence stands here in front of us. And of course, it went on loop on CNN. And of course, the killing portion went on loop on MSNBC. And of course, they went out to the same people that you would always go out to, people like D.L. Hughley.
I think America just doesn't have a problem with Americans, African-Americans or people of color being slain at the hands of the police.
Yeah, except there's a lot of us who are very concerned about the Philando Castile case. And I forget the name of the gentleman who had the cell phone in California. We were concerned about that. A lot of us were concerned about the Eric Garner case, the guy who, unlike Al Sharpton, who owes how much to the state of New York? When you get past the fines and then what's he owe, $4 or $5 million in taxes to the state of New York and then another, I don't know, $14 million or something to the federal government. Al Sharpton can go to New York whenever he wants. And he's a blatant criminal. Eric Garner is selling Lucy cigarettes and he, you know, tragic thing. He didn't listen to the cops. He didn't want to go to jail. They took him to the ground as they were taught to do. And the man died. A lot of us were disturbed by that. In this case, I'm not disturbed. Cop did what the cop had to do. The suspect had gone to the weapon. Was he trying to throw it away? Maybe. entered my mind he might be trying to throw that away. But guess what? If I'm the cop behind the guy, no, the benefit of the doubt, that's coming to my life. I'm going home. So, of course, this case is national news. Same state, Minnesota, not far from where this occurred. The most bizarre shooting you have never heard of. I'll test you. Have you heard the name Mohammed Noor? Officer Mohammed Noor. In some parts of Minnesota, there's a really concentrated Muslim population. You know that Keith Ellison is running to be Attorney General of the state of Minneapolis. Or pardon me, the state of Minnesota. You know that he was, of course, with the Minister Farrakhan. You know that he is Muslim. There's a concentrated group of Muslims in Minneapolis and in Minnesota who, in fact, have a high, high rate of interaction with extremist groups, of people leaving to go work for ISIS. Now, is Mohammed Noor one of these people? No, almost certainly not. He got on the police force. But, and the people at Powerline Blog who are located in Minnesota, John Hinderacker and they've been trying to figure out if Mohammed Noor was hired on as part of the city's effort to bring on Muslim cops. Because Mohammed Noor, in all reality, never should have been a cop. Have you heard the name of the victim in this case? Justine Damon. You heard her name? Australian who was staying in our country. Young woman, 40 years old, called the cops and said, hey, I think there's something, you know, maybe a sexual assault going on behind my building. So the police arrive. This woman, Miss Damon, comes out of her home in pajamas. She walks to the squad car. Mohammed Noor, from inside the police car, shoots her. She'd walked up to the driver, the officer who was driving. Mohammed Noor was in the passenger seat, so he shot across his partner, and he killed this woman in her pajamas for approaching the car. He has never spoken about why he did this. That has never cracked the national news. This was not a pursuit. This woman was clearly not armed. She was in pajamas. She was not a suspect. She was not acting in an aggressive manner. She had called the police. She was visiting our country. Does not crack the national media. But D.L. Hughley.
I think America just doesn't have a problem with Americans, African Americans, or people of color, being slain at the hands of the police.
Oh, yeah. Justine Damon was not an African American woman or a black woman. She's a white woman, I think, from Australia. No attention. But that death of Thurman Blevins, I blame Black Lives Matter. Well, I blame him. He didn't listen to the cops. I also blame Black Lives Matter. Because they have taught that young man, you will be killed. There's nothing you can do. Cops are on you. You will be shot. That's what they're meant to believe, or they mean people to believe. And I think it got that young man killed. Because instead of just giving up, he tried what he tried. I said there were three cases. Just keeping in mind what D.L. Hughley says here.
I think America just doesn't have a problem with Americans, African Americans, or people of color being slain at the hands of the police.
So this is a very sad and really complicated case. And it happens in cases like this. In Aurora, Colorado, 911 got a call about 1:30 a.m. And there was a disturbance in a house. A woman had called. She said that it was someone in the house was assaulting her and assaulting her family. Her father, a Vietnam veteran, Richard Black, 73 years old, went over to save his grandson's or grandchild's life and his daughter's life. He had to shoot this assailant. And thank God he was there to do it. The police arrived. they misunderstood who this gentleman, this Vietnam veteran, was. Richard Black. He was armed. It was a chaotic scene. They took that man's life. I'll tell you, as a guy who has a concealed carry permit, I bet you that man who served his country knew that risk. And I will bet you that man, that Vietnam veteran, would say to the officers, I get it. I understand what you were doing. I bet he'd forgive him. Certainly heartbroken that it occurred. But another case, media's just not interested in. Oh, yeah, he is a white man. Thanks for asking. We'll come back on the Todd Herbert Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM, and get into just a few more things. A quick arrangement of news-like items lovingly laid out into an audio feng shui mode. Oh yeah, we're playing Rush. And we're playing this song on purpose. Because there's a theme to this episode of...
Just a few more things.
Yep, news-like items laid out into a quick arrangement of audio so you can keep along at home. We number them because we tried not numbering them, and one guy just about killed himself. He just couldn't keep track. Just became too complicated. The theme today is all sorts of jobs and work getting done. Like I said, we number the items.
Thing one.
This is my personal version of, like, a light version of hell. Professional line waiters. People who stand in line for you.
People here are very busy, and they don't have a lot of time, so it's something to help them so that they don't have to waste their time doing it.
She doesn't do it for free. Golf started STL, Skip the Line, in Washington, D.C., and someone pays her to stand in line for them.
Sorry, what city? What city did they say? Was that?
Delivering groceries.
Washington, D.C. See, in a city like that where there's no recession, no depression, they make nothing, they sell nothing, they manufacture nothing, they just take, you can make money standing in line for folks. Yeah, it's my personal version of hell, but also the fact that it's occurring in D.C. I have everyone a little concerned. Next up, and just a few more things.
Thing one.
So, oh, no, what am I doing?
Thing two.
Thank you, big voice. Now, this is big in the media because, oh, teachers are underpaid. They're not, statistically speaking, not at all. But a certain teacher decided to quit his job and become something else. A full-time grocery shopper.
2017, he made a bold, life-changing decision. He took a year sabbatical from teaching to shop full-time. And now?
I make over $100,000 a year.
Delivering groceries.
Delivering groceries.
That's right. Double his teaching salary.
Yeah, double his teaching salary, working year-round, no guaranteed vacation, no retirement, no advancement. And when the recession comes, because he's not in D.C., and it will, the first things that people do away with are luxury items like having their avocado toast delivered to their front door. There's always a trade-off. So $100,000 a year, but working full-time, I don't think it's that much more. It's all up to him, though. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing three.
Hey, guy doing a good job delivering pizza to a house, happens to be a virtuoso on the piano. A customer let him play. The thing has gone viral. And what's he doing? He's delivering pizza. What can he do on the side? He can practice his craft. Find work, young people. Any work. Legal work. It's all good. Your passion, yeah, pursue it. Get a base under you so no one can push you around. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing four.
Oh, yeah. People doing their job and doing it right out of the state of Idaho. This is sweet. You know, we go to Idaho once a year, at least. They've started an emphasis patrol for people who not even lurking in the left lane, just driving too slow. You don't even have to have cars behind you. You can get yanked and pulled over and fined big time. I love me some working cops in Idaho. Last up, just a few more things.
Thing five.
First time this has been played on this talk radio program.
My salesman's like, what up? What's your budget? And I'm like, honestly, I don't know nothing about mopeds.
He's like, I got the one for you. Follow me.
Ooh, it's too real. Chrome down mirror, I don't need a windshield. Banana seat, a canopy on two wheels. 800 cash, that's a hell of a deal.
So, reminder from my past. In North Carolina, a guy in a moped tried to make away from a Walmart in Nash County, North Carolina. Sheriff's office pulled him over in the moped in the pouring rain. Guy had shoved $100 in frozen steak down his knickers, inside his pantalones, next to his Fruit of the Loons. Saw that happen at a store in Washington State. I am not kidding you. I watched a woman steal a frozen turkey between her legs and succeeded in jumping a fence. Todd Emmer Show will continue.